We just want to cover this material. This is not very tough. The interesting part about oral histology is that because of the nature of our materials that we get, that we have access to, we tend to most of the time look at the development of teeth when they are deciduous teeth, because that is in general what's available to us in the prenatal stages. And when we look at adults, when we look at regular fully formed tissues, we generally look at adult tissues, and we very seldom look at the tissues of the deciduous teeth. And so for a little while today we want to talk about that. And the fact is that in fact there isn't a whole lot of difference, but there are some nice little subtle differences that you ought to know about. So with that brief introduction, let's just look at what deciduous teeth are all about. Is this going out? Yeah. Okay. Essentially, there are, as I said, they are subtle differences, and most have to do with the fact that deciduous teeth are forming for a shorter period of time, and therefore that there are thinner layers of the hard tissues, such as enamel, dentin, and cementum. As a result, the pulpal horns tend to be proportionally much larger. And that's, of course, the real problem when you are dealing with restoration of deciduous teeth. You have to be aware of those longer pulpal horns. The root canals also are wider, and that is also, again, because less dentin forms, so you have thinner layers of dentin. And there are relatively wider apical foramina. So all of that makes a lot of sense. If you don't form a whole lot of dentin over a long period of time, if you don't form a lot of cementum, if you don't form a lot of enamel, what you get are thinner layers of those tissues. And the tissue in the case of dentin that gains as a result is the pulp. So the pulp is long, is taller, has wider root canals and wider apical foramina. Now let's begin with enamel, and enamel in the deciduous or primary teeth is whiter, okay? When you look at little kids, their teeth are white. And the reason why they are white is because that is minor actually, there is some prenatal enamel, and usually that is better mineralized. But in general, the deciduous teeth have fewer striae of Retzius. And because of the shorter lifespan, and that's critical, they have less pigment incorporation. And finally, so these C and D, I would say, are the more important ones. The dentin in a deciduous tooth is simply not as yellow as it is in a permanent tooth. And so, again, since the enamel is transparent, if it sits on a lighter tissue, it itself is a little bit lighter. On the side, this has nothing to do with the color, the cervical enamel prisms are oriented in a more incisal direction or occlusal direction. That's different from the situation in permanent teeth. What you find as a result is that you have to slightly adapt your preparation technique for deciduous teeth. You will hear later about that from Dr. Shan Lal. All right, let's now actually look at the illustrations. We are all image-oriented in this particular course. And what you're seeing here is a little line in a longitudinal grout section of a deciduous molar. And you notice here that where I drew the little arrows, that is in fact the neonatal line. The stria of Retzius, that is a neonatal line, and it's very close to the DEJ here, and so it's very tough to see. As I said before, fewer striae of Retzius, the more cervical enamel prisms are oriented not this way, which is the usual way in permanent tooth, but a little bit more this way, and so that is a difference that you need to be aware of clinically. And in the dentin, in this particular section, you're seeing in the dentin, you see more or less straight courses of the dentinal tubules. It is they are suffering from crowding, but not to the extent that you see in permanent teeth. And so you don't get quite the S shape. You get more of a backward movement of the odontoblast without too much of an S shape. This is, of course, important. This is a very pronounced neonatal line, so that is something that you need to be aware of. And in the case of the permanent tooth, I want you to see all of this here is pigment. This brown stuff is all pigmentation. This has been acquired post-eruptively, after the tooth actually emerged in the oral cavity. For a period of time, this tooth has been around and it has accumulated pigmentation from whatever was floating around in the saliva. So that is for enamel. Enamel, then, the differences are about color, about thickness, about striae of Retzius, and about pigmentation that has been acquired. Now let's look at dentin. Dentin in deciduous teeth don't have that particular sharp peritubular dentin. So you remember those images with these very bright, hypercalcified peritubular dentin halos around the lumen of the dentinal tubules. You don't see that in deciduous teeth. There is peritubular dentin, but it's far less distinct and certainly not as well mineralized. We have the less pronounced S shape that we just saw, especially near the cervix. And then very importantly, and that's something that you need to be aware of, again, clinically, there is a faster rate of reactive dentin formation in the deciduous teeth. So deciduous teeth are making every attempt to protect that pulp, and they do a better job than the case of the permanent teeth. And so this particular picture, which you have seen before, actually shows you, come on, go away, this patch of reactive dentin. And that's quite a large amount. And this was simply formed in response to incisal edge attrition, a little wearing down of the tip of the incisal edge. When it hit the dentin, there was this immediate response of reactive dentin formation. And you find fair large amounts of reactive dentin in the deciduous teeth. Again, the neonatal line is here. It is the light line, not the dark line. Now, as far as the pulp is concerned, there are actually some interesting differences, and they may reflect some of the different behaviors of the deciduous pulp. First of all, there are proportionally more unmyelinated axons. Secondly, there is a lower density of nerves. That's interesting. And because there are fewer nerves and because there are fewer myelinated nerves, there is a lower expression of substance P, a calcitonin gene-related protein that is normally co-distributed with substance P, and VIP. So there is less of a response when the afferent nerves are being stimulated. So the tooth is not quite as jumpy as the permanent pulp is. And what you find is that the innervation of the dentin in the deciduous teeth is not as high in the incisal and occlusal regions. It is high in the cervical third of the crown. And so what you find is in the deciduous teeth, the cervix of the tooth is more sensitive. That's a very interesting difference, and we don't quite understand why that is. These are all mostly observations. Are they huge differences? No, they're not. But you should be aware that there are some differences. And then what you find is that there is the deciduous tooth has this ability to mount impressive responses to both advancing caries and to root resorption by just stimulating the lymphocytes, and you get remarkable increases in certain groups of lymphocytes when caries is present, and you find also significant increases of B lymphocytes when root resorption is taking place. So that is a most amazing thing, because I showed you yesterday a picture of a pulp that was pretty much being destroyed during root resorption, but that pulp tissue still is capable of maintaining some effort in healing and defense capabilities in this final and terminal situation. There are these diffuse calcifications with dystrophic components, and then finally, when the tooth has been prepared for the tooth fairy, you find these resorption lacunae, and this is in fact a remarkable picture. We have seen already the picture of an oblique section through the DEJ with all of those little concavities when you had a scalloped DEJ. With the resorption lacunae at a thick section with this much oblique looking at it, you again get all of these scalloped depressions, which are all Howship's lacunae. So the final boundary of where root resorption occurred is very sharply marked by these lacunae. And we also mentioned yesterday that there was the osteoclast resorption of dentin. All right, finally, the cementum. The cementum in the deciduous teeth hardly gets a chance to form, and so it becomes an extremely narrow band. You have, when you look at the deciduous teeth, the cementum is almost non-existent. And they are also not as well calcified, so you find both cementum and dentin are capable of being resorbed relatively quickly in deciduous teeth. We are moving right along. And now we do the lab introduction, which is in part showing you the same images, so we don't have to spend a lot of time. But what we are doing here, we today combine the lab of the eruption as well as the lab of the deciduous teeth, because they are frequently the same structures that you see. 270 and L1 are the sections that that you can see that have erupting teeth. And what you find is in these erupting teeth, you have HERS, epithelial remnants of malacae, development of PDL fibers, all of which you have seen already. And then, most importantly, the intermediate zone in the developing PDL and the intermediate cementum that has just been laid down at the beginning of all cementum formation. The question, how much cementum has been deposited at this point, acellular cementum? Almost none. Okay, there's almost no cementum on the root of an erupting tooth. What you can see, especially in L1, you can see the hyaline layer of Hopewell-Smith, as you will recall, that was the external unmineralized predentin, and there was a continuation of the internal predentin, and so this outer layer of root dentin has this unmineralized layer next to the developing periodontal ligament, which is known as the hyaline layer of Hopewell-Smith. L1 has something interesting also, and that is that there are little remnants of the deciduous tooth found in the gingiva and in the marginal periodontium. And if you look closely, and you are all now, I hope, capable to look at those tissues and kind of figure out what they are, what you're seeing here, this dark layer, that is what kind of tissue? Give a guess. Huh? No, go ahead. Okay, we are backing off. That is AEFC, so that is the actual cementum on the outside of the deciduous tooth root, and if that is the cementum, then this is a little bit of dentin. Okay, with Howship's lacuna here, another Howship's lacuna there. So you're seeing these little bits and pieces that are still found in the connective tissue and even sometimes in the epithelium, as you can see here, that were remnants of the deciduous tooth that simply did not get moved out as the permanent tooth started to erupt. So these are rather interesting little structures, and you can, those of you that are going to look with the microscope are going to find them. There's no question about it. Now, slide 302 or 303 will show you some early resorption of the deciduous root. Just to show you this, this is a deciduous molar tooth, and so here is one root, and that is this one here, and then there is a loose segment of the other root, simply because that root is slightly slanted, and so not the whole root length is in the section. And if you look closely on this surface here and on this surface here, you see that there is some loss of dental tissue. And in fact, it is fairly significant. What you're seeing here, this is the pulp of the deciduous tooth, this is the dentin. And when you look now, here is, this tooth is not even erupting fully yet. This is maturation enamel. Why do I see maturation here? Because I see the papillary layer. And so there's a papillary layer here, and nevertheless, this permanent tooth is moving in this direction. It has already broken down the bone that separated the individual bony crypts of this permanent tooth from the alveolus of the deciduous tooth. So it has gone through the bone. It has broken down most of the PDL. PDL is gone, lost. Bone is lost. And most of the root is lost. So because you have this large opening from here to here where the root is actually gone, and you have actually penetrated into the pulp. So this is quite already a lot of resorption with a tooth that is truly not really erupting yet. It's just moving in the direction. Okay, the deciduous teeth, A4, have the longitudinal ground section. A4 here may have this, and G2 is the regular section that we just discussed. So, let's go upstairs. I want you to sign up upstairs for the library assignments. 1 through 10, you pick your one. And the rest of you get ready for... Yo! I'm still talking. Don't all start talking all at once. What I'm saying is, please come upstairs, even if you don't have a small group session, to select your library assignment. Okay? And then the small group sessions and the microscope group go do their thing. Thank you.